Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Rick returns November 4th. Indivisible Charlottesville is dedicated to resisting the Trump agenda. They focus on national issues in Virginia's 5th Congressional District. Returning to the wake-up call this morning are David Singerman. David lives in Charlottesville and is an assistant professor of history and American studies at the University of Virginia. He's an historian who specializes in the sugar industry and has published an op-ed piece in the New York Times about the industry's long record of manipulating scientific research. David has volunteered for progressive campaigns since high school. And Corinne Casey. Corinne lives just south of Charlottesville in Batesville with her husband and two young children. Before turning to mothering full-time 4 years ago, Corinne worked as a program manager for a local environmental consulting firm. She has a master's degree in environmental leadership from Naropa University. While not chasing her kids, she works part-time as a life coach and freelance writer. Helping to start Indivisible Charlottesville is her first foray into political organizing. Welcome back to you both.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
We're going to talk about Indivisible Charlottesville a lot during the next hour, but I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the Indivisible organization, the national organization. It was founded before the inauguration, even, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. A couple of weeks after the election of Donald Trump, a few former Democratic congressional staffers got together and decided to put together a guide for outraged and angry progressives and citizens all across the country about what they could do to fight back from a position that seemed kind of hopeless, right? If we think back to the late fall, early winter of 2016, 2017, it looked like progressives would be completely out of power and that Obamacare was dead and all sorts of horrible things were going to happen.
And so the indivisible chapters across the country are modeled from this original document. It was a document, right, that started as a Google document.
And now it's a national organization with a bunch of full-time staff, and then there are these chapters all across the United States that have autonomy in the sense that we can plan our own events and set our own agenda, but we have this sort of structure and guide laid out from National Indivisible.
And I think it's worth pointing out that this is a totally organic kind of movement, right? The founders, Leah Greenberg and Ezra Levin, who had worked for Democrats on Capitol Hill, they just put this Google Doc, they just posted it online and sent it around to some friends. And all of us, within a couple of weeks, they had to get all their friends, everybody they knew, into their apartment in Washington, D.C. to, handle the volume of emails and requests that were coming in. And all of these groups like ours that started across the country really did truly come up from the grassroots. It wasn't like there was a national organization that sent people out to start chapters in other places. This is a real bottom-up organic movement.
Right. And it's about acting locally, though, isn't it? I mean, so Indivisible Charlottesville is only interested in the 5th District.
Right. The guide was really clear from the outset that we have the most power as constituents related to our own representatives. So our 5th District congressional representatives and our senators, basically politicians only care to hear about their constituents.
Of which we have three politicians, right? We have two senators in the 5th District, and we have a representative in the House of Representatives. For people who don't know, our two senators are both Democrats, and our House of Representatives representative is not a Democrat. He's a Republican, and his name is Tom Garrett, and we're going to talk more about him in just a moment. I want to move on to the embodiment of the indivisible concept and idea as a local organization. First of all, you're all volunteers, right?
Yeah, the giant check from George Soros has not arrived yet.
And it's a grassroots. It doesn't have a hierarchy. You don't really have leaders as such. You just have a lot of people with a similar idea working together to accomplish something. Is that the way it works?
That is the way that it works loosely, more in a day-to-day kind of way. We have a steering committee that's made up of about 10 people, and we meet every week and sort of shape the events and strategize together. And then we have a huge membership on Facebook and that sort of thing with people and volunteers who help us put on all of the events and are really showing up with us.
That's right. And it's also worth, again, emphasizing that, you know, the 10 of us on the steering committee, nobody appointed us or elected us. We just kind of threw the first meeting and put up the first Facebook page for an indivisible group in Charlottesville. And hundreds of people, eventually thousands of people, kind of responded to this call. And one of the really wonderful things about being part of this movement for the last, almost 2 years at this point, has been the number of amazing, wonderful, like dedicated, brilliant people who have like emerged, right? Who had no, like all of us, had no previous kind of leadership or organizational experience and have emerged to hold their own events, like be incredibly creative about the ways that they're fighting back against this administration.
Right. So you all have day jobs, right? Do you have any full-time staff?
No, not at all.
No. Okay. So everybody's a volunteer, yeah. and you all
at the local level, the national organization is.
Oh, sure.
You know, a nonprofit that has employees and so forth.
Sure. And is there any fine tuning from the national? I mean, obviously, you're supporting a Democratic candidate here in this district, but you're not a part of the Democratic Party. Is that right?
That's correct.
You're not a branch of the Democratic Party.
We are not a branch at all of the Democratic Party.
Right. So you're about values, right? About values and integrity in politics.
Yeah.
Am I right?
About progressive values and, yeah, as you said, integrity. I mean, anti-corruption has become a big part of what we're about and what people are motivated by when they join Indivisible, largely because they see the corruption that is so evident in this Congress and this administration. I think the reason that a lot of people joined Indivisible back in early 2017 rather than joining the Democratic Party is because they felt like the Democratic Party was not really representing their values.
I want to talk a little bit about the use of social media because we're going to come back to this during the program. You've made extensive use of social media. What are the main avenues of social media, the main platforms that you use?
Facebook has been really powerful for groups that are trying to organize in, under the Trump administration, right? It has let us put together events really quickly, get out our message really quickly, mobilize people. People can have been able to form communities, right? One of the reasons that, like, the Women's March was so powerful and so energizing, I think, was that people on the left discovered for the first time since the election that there were other people like them, right? Or that there was a community that they weren't alone.
Sure.
And these social networking, social media tools have let people form those, continue to be part of those communities.
And are there other social media tools you use besides Facebook?
Yeah, we have a pretty active Twitter presence as well. And obviously our website and our email list, but those seem almost old-fashioned compared to our, social media. And some groups are, other Indivisible groups are much more, they'll have like Instagram or even like Snapchat stories or something like that, and that's just not, hasn't been something that we've prioritized.
And it's the volunteers at the organization that do these posts for you, and these tweets? Or do you have somebody dedicated that does that?
Right, we have people on our steering committee who's kind of one of their primary roles is staying on top of our Facebook and Twitter.
Uh-huh. Do you get feedback? You get feedback from the progressive community through these mechanisms?
Yeah, it's important to say that these aren't kind of one-way communication tools, right? They're not like it's not like a newsletter, right? We'll post something on Facebook and people will respond and comment and engage with us or talk to us on Twitter and send us information or send us events that we should be aware of, or maybe you know, a congressman is going to be at some event that we might want to know about and might want to attend and show up and ask some tough questions. So it's building community not only like among people, but also between, you know, the organization and its members. But the organization is just made up of its members anyway.
Right. Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers David Singerman and Corinne Casey are in our studio this morning. We're talking about what their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I want to talk about the Kavanaugh appointment. A dark day for progressives, for sure. What's your position on the Kavanaugh situation? They're Indivisible's, Charlottesville's position? You're against it?
Yes, absolutely. We're against it. I mean, it was the appointment itself was, I think we kind of saw that coming in the wind as we got closer and closer to it. I would say that beginning with Dr. Ford's testimony, the lead up to her testimony, the events that followed, the way that she was treated, the way that the media kind of spun and created two polarizing stories around it, and then all of the pressure being put on specific senators. The whole thing, I think, was a really jolting experience for progressives all across the country, including Indivisible Charlottesville, for sure.
Did you personally watch the hearings or parts of the hearings?
I did, yes.
Yeah. Do you think that this Kavanaugh thing is a setback for the progressive movement?
I mean, it's obviously a setback because we have an incredibly conservative, hyper-partisan Supreme Court justice on the court for his lifetime now. But as far as testing the strength of the progressive resistance and the passion and the power that people have, I wouldn't say that it's a setback in that sense. I think for me personally, looking at it, when I think about the senators who we were pressuring in Maine and Alaska, West Virginia, North Dakota, you know, those senators have been in there forever, and they're used to operating in a certain level of corruption and distance. They're not used to activists pressing them and holding them accountable in the way so many incredibly courageous women were. And I think that impacted them, and I think it will have reverberating effects on how powerful we know that we can be, and that it sort of sets a new precedent, really, for what it means.
So are you saying that you think that this Kavanaugh thing strengthened the Me Too movement? Do you think overall it strengthened it?
I mean, I know for me what it did was, I was a young girl during the Anita Hill, So I that's not as alive for me as what it's like to be a woman now and someone who for the past couple of years has been more of an activist. So to have the issue of patriarchy and sexual assault and this sort of like layer of what it's like, what the world is like, there's nothing new that's happened, you know, that this exposed, like this has been going on for as long as there's been civilization, right? But to have it, and I'm used to moving through the world knowing that and kind of putting it down and not really paying attention to that truth of what it's like to be a woman moving through American society. And to have Christine Blasey Ford come forward and speak in the way that she did, all of the stories, all of the women that came out to kind of tear the Band-Aid off in the sense of like, this is what life is like here. This is real. This is happening. I think in the big picture, that's positive and it's powerful. And I think that's sort of like the golden lining if there is as terribly painful as it is to be a progressive alive right now. I think overall, that's the golden side of this is the power, what's at play right now in so many different ways has been at play for such a long time. It's just out in the open now, and people are able to engage with it in a new way and feel what it feels like to live in a democracy and use your voice, which is kind of what Indivisible what it was giving birth to in a way. So I think in the long arc of history, you know, this, I like to believe that we're changing what it's like to live in a democracy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Corinne just said. And I think that, you know, the Trump selection was obviously a setback. But on the other hand, it prompted this, you know, reaction, which you saw, like, which you see in Indivisible and which you saw at the Women's March, and this incredible mobilization of people, not just on the left, but even, like, in the, you know, in the center. And a little over a year ago, right, the events of August 11th and 12th here in Charlottesville woke up a lot of people across the country and in our community to, you know, what the importance of taking white supremacy seriously. And I like to think that, I again, kind of being trying to be optimistic in the way that Corinne ended her, what she was just saying, I would hope that we'll look back on, you know, the horrible events that got Kavanaugh into the Supreme Court and say that it was a moment when a lot of people, and especially men, right, in America, woke up to what a patriarchy is really like and committed themselves to fighting it, right? I didn't watch the hearings on TV, but I listened to them on the radio, and it was, you know, it was awful, and I don't feel like I've actually felt the same way since then.
Yeah, sure. I want to move on to voter registration. You've had Indivisible Charlottesville's had a very active role in getting people registered and training people to get people registered. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this is, you know, the foundational importance to democracy, not only because there's so many voter suppression efforts that are happening right now. We did some voter registration in partnership with local organizations like Virginia Organizing for the 2017 election, right? And this spring, a number of organizations in Charlottesville, including Indivisible, Virginia Organizing, Moms Demand Action, and lots of others, got together and really set about building a coordinated voter registration campaign as much as we could. And so since our kickoff meeting in March, which 50 or 60 people showed up to and got voter registration, got some voter registration training, we've held, I've lost track of how many trainings we've held, but we've trained over 300 people in doing voter registration. We've had people all over town, you know, almost every day since April. I wish we'd kept better records of how many people we'd actually registered, but it turned out to be hard to do that because people were taking the initiative and, like, going out and registering folks on their own and handing the forms to the registrar on their own. And so it was really wonderful to see, and it's super meaningful work. And I should say that also, in addition to doing registration, we also did a lot of work restoring the right to vote to former felons, which is something that has been possible because of the actions of Governor Governor Northam and Governor McAuliffe. And that has just been some of the most meaningful work that I've ever done personally, and I know that other people feel the same way. And even getting people the IDs that they need to vote with groups like Spread the Vote, which is a wonderful organization.
And voter registration is closed now for the November elections, but you're still actively encouraging people to get registered for the next election. Is that right?
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you're not registered to vote, you should go to elections.virginia.gov and register to vote. The deadline to register in time to vote in this November's election passed on Monday was October 15th. But there are going to be primary elections coming up in the spring, and voter registration is something that people keep putting off, and it's worth doing all the time.
I'd like to talk about the tax bill. You, Indivisible Charlottesville, launched a protest outside Republican Tom Garrett's office. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back. It feels like a little bit like it was a lifetime ago.
It was just November, wasn't it?
Right. It was just November. I mean, part of the reason it feels like a million years ago is because so much stuff, both wonderful stuff and terrible stuff, has happened since November. And also because Tom Garrett announced in the spring that he wouldn't run for re-election. And so very quickly, our attention as a group shifted away from putting pressure on him to, you know, trying to win the seat back for progressives. So many more of my brain cells have been, many fewer of my brain cells have been devoted to Tom Garrett in the last 6 months than were for the 18 months before that.
Is that frustrating, doing that kind of protest? Do you feel like you're just talking to nobody? I mean, you don't get any feedback from the congressman, do you?
No, not from the congressman. And I think after our first couple protests at his office, it became apparent that there, like, the point was not to try and engage with Tom Garrett. When I think back to the tax protests and all the protests that we have done in general, there's something. What I get most out of is just the collective voices that come together to kind of feel how many people feel really passionately about these issues and to feel the togetherness and power that we have to use our voices. Certainly, as it relates to Tom Garrett, there was no sense on our part that we were going to change his mind or impact his decision-making process in any way.
Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers David Singerman and Corinne Casey in our studio this morning. We're talking about what their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. After the break, Indivisible Charlottesville throws a retirement party for 5th District Representative Tom Garrett. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with David Singerman and Corinne Casey. I want to talk about using humor to reach people. Tell us about the Trump chicken.
The Trump chicken. So the Trump chicken is not ours. We got word that the Trump chicken was passing through town.
We should probably explain what the Trump chicken is for those who don't know.
It was just passing through town. Yeah, yeah. Please tell us, what is the Trump chicken?
It's a giant inflatable chicken that has a head that looks like Donald Trump.
There are very few times when I wish we were TV, but this is one of them. But I'm sure if you Google Trump chicken, you can get to see a picture of the Trump chicken.
Yeah. So it turns out that there are 4 Trump chickens around the country. I believe that's right. And one of them belongs to, a member of the resistance in, I think, Roanoke. And at some point she reached out to us and offered that the chicken would be waddling, what do chickens do, whatever, through Charlottesville, and that if we wanted to use it at a protest, we could, we could arrange that. And I have to admit that I'm not sure I recognize what the Trump chicken looked like. Personally, I was a little bit skeptical. I didn't think that it takes like 10 minutes to inflate it. I didn't think that anybody would let us do that, you know, without kicking us off whatever property we were on. But it is magical. It is just an amazing looking object, and people want pictures with it. We've gotten almost more emails on that than anything else. People want to know when the chicken is coming back.
Sure. But you had a little friction with Albemarle County, right? Over this use of their parking lot?
Yes, we did. The friction with Albemarle County over using the space by the county building where McIntyre passes through has been sort of a slow build, I think. They had been sort of increasingly letting us know that it wasn't appropriate for us to be using the green space for our... We have weekly protests every Tuesday evening from 5 to 6 there, and we also had a bigger rally there related to immigration, and we had just sort of been getting an increasing number of emails from them saying it's not okay for you to use this space.
I want to talk about Denver Riggleman now. How did he come into the picture? It was Tom Garrett when you started. He was the Republican candidate. Now it's Denver Riggleman. What happened?
Yeah, so in late April, early May, there started to be some news stories around the idea that Tom Garrett might not run for re-election. Eventually, what happened was that he held a press conference and announced that he was going to not run for re-election so that he could seek treatment for alcoholism. And I haven't heard any more about that story, but I hope that he's getting that treatment and that he's, recovering, and like really legitimately wish him the best and for his family. But it did leave a hole for the Republican Party in the 5th District to fill, which is that they thought they had an incumbent, but now they needed to find a candidate to run for the congressional seat on really short notice. And I think it was only 4 or 5 days later that a very tightly contested Republican committee meeting chose Denver Riggleman to be the nominee for the congressional seat here.
Right. And so, undaunted, you held a retirement party for Tom Garrett.
That was earlier, to be clear.
Okay.
The retirement parties were held across the country by indivisible groups just after the turn of the year, I think. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, meant to be like satirical and joking, but to signal that indivisible groups across the country were going to do everything that they could to make sure that there's a progressive wave in these coming November's elections.
Oh, I see. So you actually had the retirement party before he retired?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I think the party was January or February.
You think you encouraged him? I mean, to retire?
I don't know. I mean, you know, he has his personal struggles that he's dealing with, but there have been dozens and dozens of Republican congressmen across the country who are not running again in, you know, in this election. And that's, I think, because they can see the wave coming.
Talk about the use of humor to get your point out there. You've done the Trump chicken and the Tom Garrett's retirement party. They're somewhat both tongue-in-cheek. I mean, they're serious, I understand that, but there's a tongue-in-cheek element to it. Do you find that as an effective way to reach people?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think in general, like, satire and humor are a way that people can get at those in power when they themselves feel out of power, right? And the progressive movement right now doesn't have a lot of actual kind of political leverage in the traditional sense in this country, but humor is a great way to you know, point out hypocrisy and corruption. So one thing that you didn't mention is that around the time, I think it was of the passage of the tax bill, we wanted to highlight that Tom Garrett and the Republican Party were just doing the bidding of their corporate and billionaire donors. And so one of our members dressed up like Mr. Moneybags from Monopoly and had a huge check from, you know, a huge kind of novelty-sized check from corporate donors that we took to Tom Garrett's office and presented it to him. And, you know, you won't be surprised to hear that Tom Garrett and his staff were not super excited to have their picture taken with Mr. Moneybags and the giant check. But you know, I think humor is also effective, to go back to your point about social media, right, at spreading. People like to retweet and repost funny things. And so that video, actually, of Mr. Moneybags made it onto Rachel Maddow's show. And that's kind of the ultimate achievement for many indivisible groups, like making right. one of your actions get onto Maddow.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, that's what it's all about, right? It's about getting the media to listen to you, right? I mean, that's part of the mandate of the indivisible movement, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So it's not just about Trump. You've done some other things. You organized a protest for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Tell us about that.
Yes, we did. That was just joining efforts with some other groups in the area who focus primarily on resisting the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and Mountain Valley Pipelines that are going to pass through this area. So as David mentioned earlier, I think Indivisible is not a wing of the Democratic Party. And I think really at the heart of what we're looking for is ways to resist corporate interests and corruption when they get in the way of the protection and health of people. And so the pipeline issue definitely falls squarely within that. So there were Red and Terry Miner, a mother and daughter who had been doing some tree sitting to resist the pipelines. They were coming through town, and so we wanted to help amplify their voices and get that message out there to Governor Northam around stopping the pipelines.
Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers David Singerman and Corinne Casey in our studio this morning. We're talking about what their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. So, separating families, been in the news. It's tragic. Has individual Charlottesville been involved at all in getting heard on this issue?
Yeah, I think that the family separation policy that the Trump administration put in place at the border was one of those moments in the last, 18 months that really kind of cut through. Every day brings some new news of the latest horror show that the Trump administration is perpetuating. But there have been a few moments that have really broken through the noise and gotten people incredibly angry and outraged and upset and motivated to take action. The Women's March was kind of the first one. Obamacare repeal was another. The shooting in Parkland, Florida was another that people really came out to. The March for Our Lives events were much bigger than anybody had anticipated. And similarly, the Families Belong Together and Free rally that we held, I think, was that we held here along with rallies across the country was a moment for people who were especially outraged about that policy to come together and demonstrate their solidarity against it and kind of recommit themselves to electing different leadership.
And in your own local rally, I mean, was it well attended?
Yeah, it was very well attended.
And what was the feeling? I mean, was it anger? Was it just people were upset? I mean, what was the feeling that day from the crowd that were there, the people that were there?
And I think at all of these events, there is definitely an element of anger and kind of almost like betrayal that our country could be doing this in our name. People show up because they're angry, but I think they leave inspired and motivated to do the work that it's going to take to elect a different Congress in a few weeks and a different president in a couple of years and up and down the ballot, right, to elect the kind of leaders who are going to change things because we make them change things.
And do you feel that your protests had anything to do with the Trump administration backing off? I mean, they backed off on the policy a little bit, although I understand it's still going on, even though they claim they've backed off. But did you feel empowered during that time, or just frustrated?
I mean, like David said, there was a huge response nationally, and I think, and it wasn't stopping. Like, the clamor was continuing. So there were the rallies that happened, the Families Belong Together and Free rallies that happened, but then the outrage just continued. And I do think that continued sustained outrage from people impacted his decision to back off some elements of that policy.
Let's talk about the Yard Sign Project. Where'd that idea come from? Well, first of all, tell our listeners what the Yard Sign Project is and where did the idea come from?
So, one of the main problems with elections in the United States is that turnout is much lower than we would like. And so what we wanted to do, especially around the 2017 statewide elections, which don't get as much coverage as national elections for lots of reasons, one of the things we were really concerned about was that just people wouldn't vote at all. And so we started making nonpartisan yard signs and offered those to people, to businesses, to nonprofit organizations around the Charlottesville area, because they would make the election more visible, and I think we were kind of blown away at the demand for them, and so it's something that we started again this year for the 2018 elections, and we ran out pretty quickly, and I think we're making more.
And how do you fund projects like that?
People donate money to us.
Okay, good. And do you have enough money?
Never. We can never. I mean,
never.
We have. People are, I think, in a giving mood these days, which you can see from the fundraising numbers that progressive candidates across the country are donating.
Sure.
And we're really grateful to all the people who have donated to us. I think with if people donated more, we could do even more, right? Like, for example, one of the things that I would have liked to do if we had another, you know, $5,000 rattling around in our bank account would be to run ads on podcasts in Virginia, encouraging people to go vote, since the demographic that listens to podcasts, I'm pretty sure, is younger than the audience that listens to radio. Sure. And it would be a great way to reach kind of, you know, younger voters who don't turn out as much. So there's lots of projects that we've considered but had to put on ice because of funding issues.
Sure. Speaking of reaching out, postcard parties. Talk about that.
Right. So we've been basically since the spring, we've been doing everything that we can to get people to the polls on November 6th. So that began with our voter registration efforts that we talked about earlier. And over the summer, that morphed into weekly happy hours that we do at Random Row Brewing Company downtown, where we've printed up a bunch of postcards with the different issues that are at stake in this election. And people come out from 5 to 8 on Thursdays. And now we also have one every Tuesday at Crozet Pizza in Crozet. And one of the things that came out of the November 2017 election was that writing postcards has almost as much impact as knocking on doors. And so we set this goal of trying to send, 20,000 postcards before November 6th to try and reach as many voters as we could. We send postcards. The lists that we pull are of occasional Democratic voters. So we're writing to the people who sporadically vote, and in a hope that when they get a personalized postcard from someone saying, "This, there's an election coming, I'm voting, please vote, this is what's at stake," it will help them remember to turn out on November 6th.
So these are handwritten postcards?
They are handwritten.
Both front and back are handwritten?
No, the front usually has language that we've printed related to specific issues and then on the back, it's handwritten.
And you're shooting, did you say you're shooting for 20,000?
So
that's a lot of postcards.
We had the same reaction of kind of disbelief at the beginning when we set it as a goal, but we thought that it would be a useful target. But the degree of enthusiasm that people have shown for these postcard events is really staggering. And we actually passed 20,000 just a few days ago.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations.
So, some people will be getting 2 postcards from us, actually.
it's never too many postcards.
But, in an election where only a few hundred thousand people will vote in the 5th district, that's not a trivial number at all.
No. And these elections can often be decided by only a few votes per precinct.
Right. Exactly.
Or even, as we saw in the House of Delegates this past, this past November, by one vote overall.
Exactly. Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers David Singerman and Corinne Casey in our studio this morning. We are talking about what their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stream us live online at 947wpvc.org or on your mobile device via TuneIn. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. So some of that money we were talking about earlier went into a radio ad. I thought what we'd do is we would listen to it, and then we'll talk about it. All right. So everybody, please stay with us. This ad runs about 30 seconds, and then Corinne, David, and I will be back, and we'll talk about it.
The following message is from Indivisible Charlottesville.
There is a lot at stake in the election on November 6th, and your vote is powerful. Why else would there have been so many efforts to stop people from voting? Voter suppression is real, because the difference you can make by voting is real. Claim your power. Vote November 6th.
You can learn more at indivisiblecharlottesville.org/vote. That's indivisiblecharlottesville.org/vote.
I love that ad. I love the way he says your vote is powerful, and we're going to prove it because people are trying to make it so you can't vote. Where did the idea for the radio ad come from?
Well, to be honest, I think part of our steering committee meetings every week, we're just racking our brains for creative ways to turn out people to vote and let them know that this election is coming. And so the yard signs came out of those discussions, and the radio ad also came out of those discussions.
And are you running the ad on all local radio stations or selected radio stations?
We have a point person who is dealing with the radio ad who is not in the studio with us today. But we're running it on several stations around Charlottesville. I believe it's running on WTJU as well. So people will have heard it.
And WPVC.
Yes. needn't be said.
So was it recorded locally? It sounds like a professional production. Value of it seems very good.
One of the nice things about having kind of 10 central organizers is that people have links to different talented communities around Charlottesville. And some of us have connections with video and audio production people around town, and those people have reached out and said, you know, if you need help producing a PSA or a video or something like that, we're willing to pitch in. That's been one of the really nice things to see again, is that people are really, stepping up and contributing their talents to the progressive movement.
Sure. I want to talk about how important it is for people to come out and vote. First of all, midterm elections are notoriously undervoted. That's not the right word, but undersubscribed by the voting electorate. But this one is different. Why is this midterm election different than all the ones that came before it?
Well, this election is the first time that the nation as a whole will get the chance to render a verdict on what the Trump administration has been doing for 2 years and what the Republican Congress has been enabling it to do for 2 years and covering up for it. We've gone through in our discussion like a number of the like terrible things that they've inflicted on the country, and we haven't even gotten to many of them, right? And this is the chance to elect representatives who will hold this government accountable, right, and investigate Donald Trump's corruption and make sure that families are not separated at the border, make sure that coverage for pre-existing conditions is safe and secure. If there are things you don't like about the Trump administration, this is the time to let them know.
Right. The truth is, we basically have no power in the government right now. If you're progressive, you have no representation there. So this is the first time that we have a chance to get representation. And so that is, President Obama said this is the most important election of our lifetime. And I certainly feel that way. But to hear him say it makes it true. Donald Trump has been building a narrative about the way that America has been responding to what he's been doing. And he's been creating this sort of reality that he wants people to swallow. And this is the first opportunity that we have to show him what Americans actually believe and how they actually feel about the decisions and choices that he's making. So, there just couldn't be any, there's no other way. This is our central, this is our most powerful weapon as citizens in a democracy. And it's our first chance to use our power. So it's a really big deal.
You have a campaign going called Flip the Fifth. But it's not a done deal, is it? It's still a tight race. So people who are listening to us shouldn't be sitting at home thinking, somebody also vote and I don't need to. It's going to be still a tight race, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a really, really tight race. Our district is gigantic and severely gerrymandered, it's the cards are stacked to try and have it be a Republican district. So it's going to be super, super tight, and it's going to come down to a couple of hundred votes, I think, onto which way that it goes. So if you live in certain communities and the outrage feels palpable and all around you and it feels like a done deal, please don't allow that to affect whether or not you turn out on November 6th, because there's nothing that gives me any peace of mind that this is anyway going to be a blue district for sure. It's super, super, super tight.
And can we talk for a minute about your candidates? You're supporting Leslie Coburn. Anybody want to talk about Leslie and her qualifications to lead the 5th district?
Well, Leslie is basically, if you are progressive, she is your dream candidate. She is she's supportive of a $15 minimum wage. She's absolutely supportive of health care for all. She's incredibly strong on the environment. She is has spent her entire campaign moving around this huge district, talking to voters and hearing about what's important to them. And as someone who has been sort of inordinately close to her progression as a candidate, I have seen her position strengthen and evolve based on conversations that she's had with people who live here. And I've seen her get stronger and stronger as a politician, because that's not her background. She's a journalist. And I think for me, that's a good thing, because politics can make you dirty pretty quickly. And she's clean in the sense that she's used to speaking truth to power. She's used to having difficult conversations and sticking to her integrity and her principles, no matter who she's talking to. And I think that's just the kind of representative we need right now.
Yeah, I just want to double down on those last points that Corinne made. Right. Leslie was a journalist for 30 years, like an investigative reporter. And she went to places that, you know, journalists don't have to go. Right. She went to Bosnia. She went to Afghanistan. She helped uncover like Iran-Contra. You know, these are some tough places facing off against some of the worst abuses of power in the last few decades. And the fact that she chose to wade into those fights and chose to stick up for to stand up against corruption and for people who were being oppressed and marginalized, I think is a testament to what kind of fighter she'd be in Congress.
And have either of you met Leslie in person?
We have. Back in the beginning of 2018, when we were heading down the path of caucusing for who the Democratic representative would be in our district, each of the candidates vying for that role contacted us to sit down with us. So we had conversations, around a restaurant table or someone's living room with each of them early on.
We talked in this segment about getting out to vote, the close margins. If you arrive at your precinct to vote and they tell you you can't vote for some reason or other, do you have any recourse on election day? If so, how does that work?
Yeah, so there should be legal observers from the Democratic Party and nonprofit groups at almost every polling place around the 5th District and on call if they're not right there. And those people will help you stand up for your rights if they're denied to you. You also can cast a provisional ballot, and then I think you have about a week to kind of follow up. So, if you don't have ID, you should bring a state-issued photo ID of some kind to the polls with you. You don't need to bring your voter registration card, but you do need the ID. And for whatever reason you're denied your right to cast a ballot, you should cast a provisional ballot, and I believe you have a week to go to the registrar and kind of confirm it. But there will be people at the polls standing up for you and your rights.
NBC 29 reported that 15,000 voters in Albemarle County will be affected by a change of precinct. Seems like a terrible time to be messing with the precincts, but nonetheless. Mm-hmm. How do you find out if your precinct has changed, you know?
So you can find out where your polling place is whether you live in Albemarle County or wherever you are, by going to elections.virginia.gov and checking your polling place. You can also go to a resource on our website at indivisiblecharlottesville.org/vote. We have information about the change of precincts there as well.
Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers David Singerman and Corinne Casey in our studio this morning. We're talking about what their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Just a few minutes left. I want to talk about how people can help, people who want to get involved with your organization. First of all, what kind of help do you need? And secondly, how did people get hooked up with you guys?
Right now, the help that we need, I would say, is related to the election and coming out to our postcard parties or canvassing, or if you want to connect with us through our Facebook page is a great way. You can also go to our website and subscribe to get our emails, which lets you know on a weekly basis what's going on with us. And there's also opportunities on our website to sign up for if there's specific areas that you're interested in taking action in. You can sign up through our website, and then you'll be contacted by one of us with sort of ways to get involved in the longer run. But I would say right now our postcard parties on Thursday evenings, or signing up to canvas through Leslie Coburn's website or the coordinated campaign, Tim Kaine. Those are great ways. We're pretty solidly devoted to the election on November 6th right now.
And are there any special skills that you would find helpful, people that might have special skills? I mean, I see you're doing media stuff, and I mean, you're doing so many different things. Mm-hmm. Is there some kind of skill that you're specifically hoping to find that you are short of right now?
It changes all the time, and so if you go to indivisiblecharlottesville.org, you'll see a button that says, I think it says volunteer at the top, and take action is also up there, and that will take you to our page where we have kind of specific requirements. I mean, one thing that we do need, for instance, is help recording and taking photos and, like, Facebook live streaming our events. The more we can do that, that's another way that people, even if they can't make it in person, can participate and feel the, you know, the good vibes that we were talking about that people get from participating in these resistance events. So, right, if you have any kind of, you know, AV sort of skills, we'd love to have them. But the truth is that whatever people want to do, we want to help them do it, right? Part of our mission is empowering people to resist the Trump agenda in the ways that they can. And one of the wonderful things, for example, about these postcard parties is that it's brought so many people in who didn't really know what they could do, didn't really feel comfortable, you know, going and knocking on doors for a campaign, although we hope that they all will go and knock on doors for, you know, for Leslie's campaign. But it's a great way that people who felt like they wanted to do something but didn't know what it could be have been able to come to these postcard parties and feel a sense of solidarity. And it's also given lots of people the opportunity to kind of organize these parties, right, and organize other events like phone banking and that kind of thing. So people are really, I think, discovering their own kind of organizational genius.
Talk about your own satisfaction or frustration in being an individual Charlottesville volunteer.
There's no frustration involved with being an indivisible Charlottesville volunteer. You know, as we mentioned briefly at the beginning, Indivisible Charlottesville, like, we were a random assortment of people who came together with a burning urgency to do something and wanting something to do. And over the last 2 years, as we've sort of evolved and become Indivisible Charlottesville, it's been... You know, I didn't know anyone on the steering committee except for my sister, and now we're like such wonderful friends. And it's like a place where I go, where I know the people feel the way that I do, and that we can. And it's an outlet for energy. Taking action has just been. I had no idea what to do after Trump was elected, like what taking action could look like, and now I have. so many tools at my disposal, and I've just met so many other people from all different walks of life who I never would have crossed paths with that feel that similar sense of urgency and passion. And it's made it bearable, to be honest, the vice grip of the last 2 years. Having a way to do something has made it bearable.
David?
Yeah, right after Trump's election, I read a piece by a veteran ACT UP activist from the AIDS group in the 80s. And what she wrote was that when the world seems insane, action keeps you sane. And I have found that to be true over and over again. So on a kind of personal level, it's been amazingly meaningful just to go out and knock doors or put together an event or make phone calls makes you feel like you have some control over a world that seems to be kind of spinning out of control sometimes. But I would also say that it's been, more importantly, it's been incredibly meaningful to help organize something that has so much meaning for other people, right? When we, for example, just recently, a week or two ago, we had a rally to protest Kavanaugh's nomination on that Friday night when it finally looked like he was going to be confirmed. And, I don't know how many people showed up, 75, 100 people showed up and marched down the Charlottesville downtown mall and back. And we were all feeling so kind of dark that day. And it was an opportunity that I think a lot of people expressed to me and to others at the time they were grateful for, right? People were glad to have some way to come together and be part of a community and express the way that they felt and recommit themselves to changing things in the United States. That I think having people find meaning in what we're doing as volunteers is the best part of it for me.
Mm-hmm. You were here last in March of 2017 when Indivisible Charlottesville was all shiny and new. Now you're battle hardened. I'm wondering how each of you are holding up. I mean, are you in it for the duration? I mean, how are you each holding up? It must take up a tremendous amount of your time. Do you feel energized by the process, or just do you feel like you're starting to drag?
I mean, I have a lot more white hair than I did 2 years ago.
Yeah, don't we all?
But I'm not starting to drag. I'm definitely in it for the duration. Like I said, I mean, it's what makes it's what makes it possible to live through these times for me. So it's really hard. It's really hard because part of by being active, it means you have to hold it really close. You can't kind of push it away and pretend like it's not happening and live in my little bubble of my life not being directly impacted every single day by the decisions that the Trump administration and the Republican Congress is putting forth. I have to engage with it. That's uncomfortable and painful, but it's also absolutely necessary, I think.
David, battle-hardened, hanging in there?
I think, there are moments where I kind of think to myself, can't we just go back to the way that things used to be? But the truth is, we've also all woken up, I think, to the way that things didn't used to be so great. Just the problems were submerged or buried. And it's been I've met so many inspiring people over the last couple of years that I would never have met if it weren't for this work. It's really become, I think the most important community that I'm a part of, right? I can't imagine sort of backing off or changing in any way. I mean, hopefully I'm optimistic about the blue wave that's going to crash over Congress on, on November 6th. And I think that will be a real kind of vindication of the work that so many millions of people have put into this and will re-energize us going forward because we're going to have elections coming up in Virginia that will determine control of the state house in 2019. And then a year later is the presidential election. And it's going to come quicker than we think. But that's not the end. I think that what people have realized in the last 2 years is that this is just the beginning of a much longer effort. But the payoff is going to be a country and a world that we're much more proud of.
Before we go, those URLs again, how do people get in contact with you, your Facebook page, your Twitter feed? How do people find you if they want to get involved or if they just want to follow what you're doing?
Yeah, so our website is indivisiblecharlottesville.org, all spelled out. And you can sign up to get our email updates and you can volunteer with us there. We have a very active Facebook community. If you just search for Indivisible Charlottesville there, you'll find us. And we're on Twitter at IndivisibleVA05.
Thank you both so much for coming in to talk to us again. I hope that you'll come back next year and tell us that everything is much, much better.
So do we.
Thank you.
Thank you. Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers David Singerman and Corinne Casey in our studio this morning. We've been talking about what their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. This and every episode of The Wake Up Call is available on demand at SevillePodcast.com. Join us next Sunday at 11 a.m. when our guest host, Sean McCord, will be here to talk about this year's Virginia Film Festival. And coming up at noon on 94.7 WPVC, it's El Club del Sabor. For The Wake Up Call, I'm Dan Gould. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.